All like as a staff and as a team, we work together with other churches in our city. We've always said that we'll work together with other small businesses. We work together with overseas partnerships. We work together. We don't ever want to feel like we're in competition because we have an enemy, and like that's the devil. Like we don't need to be in, our enemy is not other churches. Our enemy is not other people who are trying to advance the kingdom of God.
Hey there, it's Jason, and I want to welcome you to another episode of the Canadian Church Leaders Podcast. Today, we've got the honor of hearing from a good friend of mine, Pastor Kim Moran. Kim and her husband, Clark, are the lead pastors of Abbotsford Pentecostal Church in the Lower Mainland of BC. And over the past 5 years, Clark and Kim have been spearheading the revitalization of this 100-year-old Pentecostal church. And here's the thing. Over the next 10 years or so across Canada, churches are going to be seeing transitions happen from one generation of leadership to another. And so this conversation about revitalizing a church with a rich history like APA is so key for all of us. And so we talk about this idea of revitalization and transition and lots more in our conversation. So let's jump in. Well, hey, Kim, thanks for making time to hang out today.
Yeah, it's so good. Thanks for having me.
For people that don't know you super well, I'd just love for you to tell us a little bit about your life in Abbotsford with your family and your church and sort of the building blocks of your world these days.
Yeah. So I live in Abbotsford, BC, and I'm married to my husband, Clark. We're both in ministry, both full-time pastors in ministry. We work together, share an office, work like really hand in hand, side by side. We have a 3-year-old, almost 4-year-old little boy who we adopted from Nigeria, and a dog who's allergic to grass. That's our life. So we're pastoring together, living together in Abbotsford. Been at our church for just about 5 years now.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I'd love just to talk a little bit about your church, Abbotsford Pentecost Assembly. How old is that church? Like when did it first get established? I know there's an interesting story about it.
Yeah, it's 101 years old this year. So it was founded in 1919 here in the city. It was it's like one of the older Pentecostal churches in Canada. And wow. Yeah, it just has like a really rich history in this church, which we've been obviously like we're at the 101 year mark. So we've done a little bit of digging into the history and stuff over the last few months, especially because we actually realized that we missed the 100th birthday last year, this year. So
how did you miss the 100th birthday?
Well, I'd like to say it's not my fault, but there was an error at some point. They started celebrating the anniversary of the wrong year. But then when I went back and had access to some earlier documents that other people didn't have access to, I realized that we got it wrong. And it's honestly like a very long, complicated story about trying to figure out like which documents when you're studying history are most reliable and how do you build your history based on that. But once we did that and established all that, we realized we are 101 and we missed our centennial.
It's an incredible, incredible thing to be a church, like especially in Canada. Like I know in the UK, they're like 101 years old. Like that's a baby. Yeah. But here, like there's not a lot of churches in Canada that are over 100 years old.
Yeah.
It really makes me think because I'm obviously passionate about church planting. We talk about church planting on this podcast a lot. And church planting is an important piece of renewal. But another huge piece of the story for the next decade of the church in Canada around the world is what does it look like to actually come and enter into these legacy churches, these churches that have a history, and lead those. And I feel like it takes a whole different set of experience and intuition and insight and skill and finesse to serve a church like that than it is to church plant. I just like, tell us a little bit about, take us 5 years back, entering into this church and sort of what the landscape was at the time.
Yeah, I think I might have actually said 5 years, but I think it's been 4. But yeah, like 4 years ago at our church, I mean, our building, we have like a very prominent corner property in our city, and our building is massive, like almost 100,000 square feet. Our main auditorium seats like 1,500 people. It's just like gigantic building. But at the time, there was probably about 200, 250 people in the church, mostly seniors. Like the stat that we often give is like probably 75% of the church was over 75. Wow. And so just like a very aging They had definitely seen better days as a church, not really involved much in the community. It was just this group of seniors that were just meeting, so faithful, so committed. But the church was really like, hadn't been going anywhere. There'd been church splits and, you know, difficult leadership things. And so that's what we like walked into, but we actually lived in the city for 5 years before that. We worked at a Bible college in the city and we would drive by this church every single day. Cause we lived just around the corner. We would drive by on our way to work every day and probably like at least once a week, maybe more actually, I would like, as we drove by this building, I would look at it and I would say to my husband, like, man, it's my dream to pastor that church someday. There's just like so much potential there. I would love to pastor that church. And he's like, you're crazy. Like, that's ridiculous. Why would you ever want to do that? Because he knew the history and it hadn't been an easy place for some pastors to lead in before. And it was aging. It just didn't seem like it lined up with us. And we had so many friends at the time that were like, you guys should church plant. Like, you'd be so great at that. My husband's like a real like people person. He's like amazing with people. And I do a little bit better with just like strategy and vision things. And like together, they're like, you guys would be such a great team to church plant. But I just kept seeing this, like this big empty building and thinking like, man, like I have so much vision for that place. I feel like this could be a thriving church in this city. And then we ended up here.
It's amazing. What was that process? Did they end up posting for, for context sake, before we jump in there, what's like the population of Abbotsford? Like, just to give a sense for those who don't know the city.
Yeah, I think we're about at 160,000 yet. So we're a pretty small city. We're called the city in the country. Like it used to be all farmland. And it's kind of like, you know, a couple small towns came together and became the city of Abbotsford. So yeah, we're like in a small city.
And about an hour from downtown Vancouver.
That's right.
And, but it's a growing city. One of the things I think is so interesting about is the amount of young adults, just because of cost of living, but then also the way that there's a real like sort of culture in Abbotsford of like breweries and coffee shops and new businesses.
A lot of young entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really compelling place. And I just, I have that same memory of driving to whether it's one of those cool coffee shops, whatever it was, and seeing the church building and thinking, wow, what an incredible potential this has, because it's so positioned geographically in the heart of this growing city. Yeah. So it's just so amazing. I really connect with that picture. And just, you know, again, all across Canada, there are suburbs like this that are growing. And so I'm just thrilled that you guys found yourself there. So tell us how you ended up, whether it was applying for the job, did they post for it? What was that journey like?
Yeah, we actually heard. So the day the previous lead pastor resigned, somebody had sent Clark, my husband Clark, a message right away and just said like, hey, this pastor just resigned from this church. Crazy. And he told me right away, he knew, like Clark knew how I felt about this place. And I was like, we have to apply, because the way that things like work in our fellowship and with this church is that you like apply and there's a hiring committee and then the board approves it. And then you have to be voted in by the congregation. And I was like, Clark, like if the church is open, we have to apply. He's like, I'm not going there. No way. Like, I'm not going there. And I was like, come on, like, it's my dream. And I want to do this with you. Like, together we could be this dream team. Like, let's go, let's pastor this church. We can revitalize it, turn it around. And he was just not having it at all. And so I like probably for the next month, I kept just like nagging him really, like just like on him so much. I was like, I really want to do this, but I can't do it alone. And because even just the history of like women in ministry and our fellowship, I just knew that the likelihood that for me to apply and get the job was like really, really low. I was trying to be realistic about what that would look like for us. So I was like, but if we do this together, like you can get voted in and we can like do this together. We can like lead this church. And so he just was not, I think he was scared. It was intimidating. And I'm like a little bit more of a risk taker than he is just in general. And so I think he just felt intimidated to do it. Eventually, he came around, and the very last day before the deadline, we sent in our resumes. And when we got a call, they were like, okay, we want to interview you. And then we made it to the next round. And then we made it to the next round. They said we were in the final three, but they told us, they're like, the church filled out a survey and they said they wanted someone with at least 10 years lead pastor experience and they had to be at least 40 years old. And at this time, I'm like 32 and had never been a lead pastor before. And I was like, pick me. but somehow it was actually unanimous on the search committee and the board's vote to bring us in. And went before a vote and the congregation got in with a senior congregation. They voted young 30s in at like 87% or something, which people were preparing us that the vote wouldn't go through even after the search committee brought us in. Here we are.
It's incredible. And today, you know, I'm not going to make you have to report on this, but I'll just say on your behalf that APA is like a thriving church. It's growing. Young families are coming. You're reaching people far from God. You've got a presence in the community in the midst of COVID, a strong online presence. And it's pretty incredible what God has done over the last 4 years. And this is what we're praying to happen to hundreds of churches across Canada, that yeah. same sort of story, whether they're down to 200 in a 1,500 seat building or down to 30 people in a 200 yeah. person building to see leaders go in. And I love that the search committee took a risk. Like, I know you personally, and I know that you're not a risk, and you and Clark are that team. But I think that that's something that's going to be a reality, is it's going to be sometimes younger leaders than they expected, with maybe less senior church leader experience yeah. and taking a risk on them. Tell us some of the things that you experienced in that first year coming in terms of staff. I'm thinking about like transitioning staff, introducing new worship experience. I know you guys did some work on the building. What was it like those first 6 to 18 months as you began to introduce new life into the church? What was the response of the congregation and the team?
Yeah, I remember we actually said in our interview process to the board, we told them that we weren't probably going to change anything for the first 6 months. We're like, we're just going to come in and just get to know the people, see how the church kind of runs and functions. And then like after 6 months, we'll start to make some changes. But I don't think we realized that just our presence and our like own like DNA as leaders and our leadership philosophy and philosophy of church and everything, just our presence there would drastically change everything. Mm. So I feel like we didn't think we were changing things, but to the church who'd been there for a while, they felt like this is night and day from anything that we've experienced before. And so, yeah, in those first like few months we did kind of the past church, like some of the leadership that was there at the time, some of the support staff and pastors there, the church decided that it was time for like a just total clean slate for everything moving forward. And so we were able to bring on a couple young 20s leaders to work with us. And like one of those was like a worship leader, and then someone who could work with our like next gen department. And then it was Clark and I. And so the four of us together right at that very beginning really started to just try and shift the culture. I think that was at the very beginning, that was what it was. And honestly, the last 4 years have been shifting culture. Like that's what it's felt like more than anything, is just trying to get people to see that like church can look different. It can be, it doesn't have to, you don't have to just like come here, get your weekly dose and leave. Like it can go beyond that. But it was tough. I think, well, at the beginning, people were nice to us. And then they started being like, well, why aren't you doing this? Well, I thought by now we would be doing this. Well, I thought maybe it would look like this. And I feel like it got a little bit more challenging the more time went on. But you know, it's sometimes hard to remember those early years, because I feel like we literally just like put our heads down and we're like, what do we do? I don't know.
What were some of the internal battles going on? Like, I know that as leaders, we're constantly, there's the external things we're doing, changing culture, initiating new programs, dealing with conflict sometimes or opportunity. Then there's also the internal battle of like our own identity and self-confidence and courage mm-hmm. and insecurities. What are some of the internal things that were going on as you look back at these 4 years of trying to lead a church with history through change as a leader that they weren't familiar with, younger, female, all those things?
Yeah, I think for me personally, like as a young female leader, I think I was worried in the beginning. Like probably my biggest insecurity was that people wouldn't take me seriously. Because even in like the first few weeks, all the time was like, are you going to be one of those pastor's wives who are really involved? And I was like, oh, okay, they don't know who I am. Like, how's this going to go? Just because like I have, even though I'm married to a pastor, I've just like never really identified myself as like a pastor's wife, because I've always been like in full-time ministry, preaching, leading, doing things. And so I've never really like identified myself that way. So when people started to say that to me, I was like, okay, well, like I want to show them that I'm here and I'm capable. And so I felt like I was always trying to keep that in check in those, like that, those first, but probably the first year especially was like, how do I show them that they can like take me seriously, but I'm not leading out of this insecurity that's like, hey, take me seriously. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that was kind of challenging. Probably the biggest thing walking through that. And I'm just like not the most pastoral person in the world. I like people and I care about them, but like Clark, for example, will just like sit and talk to anyone for hours. And I'm like, oh, there's stuff to get done. Like, let's move this along. Or like, I would rather like be in the meeting, in the conversation, doing the strategy, doing the planning. So I think that was part of like trying to figure out like as a lead pastor, how do I really like own my gifts and release other people to do theirs and not feel like I needed to do anything? Because there were sometimes people like, oh, how come we never see you? How come we never pop by this? And I was like, do you know what I'm doing? I'm doing very important work upstairs in the office. So I think probably like trying to navigate through that was tough too.
As you guys were earning trust in the congregation, and maybe earning trust isn't a nice way to frame it, like earning, but I think that's a piece of it. Gaining, building maybe is a nicer word, as we're building, as you're building trust. I feel like you and Clark were really intentional to be a team, that there was work that you could do, but there's also work that you could do because he was doing certain work. Can you tell me about some of the ways you guys really intentionally came alongside the individual families, some of the older people in the congregation, and just love them on their terms?
Yeah. I feel like that is like Clark's greatest strength. Like I say to him all the time, like I've never met anybody who he could give people the worst news in the world or have the hardest conversation in the world. And they just like hug him and love him and like, you know, want to invite him over for dinner again after it's all over. Like he just has a way of like meeting people where they're at. And so that's exactly because our skill sets are like completely different, like night and day different, like with the exception of us both, like being communicators and doing like a lot of the teaching and preaching, like we share that part. The rest of our portfolio is totally different. So I do like strategy, vision, putting together the staff, making sure that we're like all on the same page moving forward, making sure that we kind of know everybody's pointed in the same direction. And he is really all about the people. And he's like making people feel loved, making sure that the individual people understand the vision, where I'm trying to like, I'm big picture. He's like really like in the trenches with the people doing that. And so that's how we operated right away, where I was like, okay, here's where we're headed. Here's what our values are. Here's the way that we're going to operate in all these things and getting all these different strategies and systems and vision things in place. And I was freed up to do that because he's literally going over to the senior's house and having sandwiches and soup, and he's helping people move, and he's walking through the hospital, just like hanging out with people. And so him doing that allowed me to be able to like really operate in what I feel like I'm best at, and vice versa. He didn't have to worry about some of the like strategy and vision things because I was doing that. So we just kind of like found our space of like, this is where I excel, this is where you excel. And I don't think I think the reason why we've experienced, if you can call it success at this point, like the reason why we've seen the growth and health come is because we've both been able to like operate in our giftings and haven't felt like we needed to fit into a certain box of something. Mm. And I mean, there's always like a little bit of like, not every day feels perfect in that. Like there are some days where you're trying to figure that out. But
yeah. Looking back in the last 4 years, anything that you'd want to tell yourself 4 years ago, advice for transitioning to church, coming alongside a church like this?
Man, I don't know. I feel like it's been such a learning curve, but I honestly, like, I think because for me, like, I feel like I'm in my sweet spot. Like I feel like I'm doing what I was created to do right now. Like that's how I feel. And so I'm like looking back, I'm like, man, would I have done anything different? Like, oh, probably. Like I'm sure I like pushed back on things I shouldn't have pushed back on, or, you know, I did something or I said something, but those things like don't stand out to me right now because I'm like, I just feel like I've been like living this dream. And I don't know. Like, I hope you don't interpret that as me being like, oh, you didn't make any mistakes. There's like, you did everything perfect. You wouldn't go back and change anything, because that's not true. But when I think back on it, I'm not thinking about all these like, oh, that was a misstep. I wish we did that different. I feel like I'm like just like looking back, evaluating the process. And I don't know what advice I'd give to myself.
Hmm. I love it. Wow. One of the things that I've appreciated watching the growth and journey of APA is while you've implemented, like improve the kids ministry or improve the worship experience, recontextualize it for a younger audience, I feel like the real thing you guys have worked on is culture.
Yeah.
And I just want to talk for a little bit about culture making in a community like that, where it, because it's really, culture is one of those things that's hard to talk about at times.
Yeah.
But that's the, I think what I've heard you say before is this is what actually can help change a church. And so just take us into your mind as you, when you were thinking about the culture you wanted to create and how do you actually move culture? I think about the way you guys have created a hospitable culture there where there's like people love welcome and you got greeters. It's not just the program of having greeters. It's a church that's welcoming.
Yeah.
Talk to me a bit about culture making at APA and what that journey has been like.
Yeah, I think very early on, we sat down and established our values as a church. And we were like, man, especially in Abbotsford, I don't know, there's like more than 100 churches here. So they're like all these different churches, people can go and experience God in so many different ways here. But like, who are we? Like, what is going to make us who we are? We know like the mission, we know what we're trying to accomplish, but what makes us who we are? And so we sat down and really like worked through what are the things that we value that we're not going to compromise on no matter what. And I think that that was a really important step for our church because it allowed us to really step in and teach and share like this is who we're going to be. And listen, there's a lot of conversations that we can have, but these are kind of like the, we just preached through our values at the beginning of the year. And we like called the series Can't Touch This, like based on a 90s theme. Because we're like, these are the things that you can't touch for us. Like is the gospel message. And like, we always say Jesus over everything, but like our values are just a really important part of who we are. And so I think establishing that, making that very clear to our people, we preach through our values. We have 7 values and we do an 8-week series every single year, like January, February, every year is preaching through our values because we just like over communicate it because we want people to know. We want it to be so clear and so obvious. So I think that that's been a big difference in like, and just like helping our people know this is the kind of church that we're going to be. But I will say like, there's some days where I feel like, oh, we haven't been successful in that at all, even though that's not true. Like, I mean, we all are able to like see the hardest like moments, but even like this past week, we just like released this big campaign where like, we're going to fill 5,000 bags of food to like fill up the shelves of our food bank. And so we like asked our people to come and like pick up enough bags to deliver them to your neighbors. They all have cards attached to them that just say, hey neighbor, like will you join us in trying to help us fill our food bank? I'm going to be back on Saturday to pick up this bag. Just leave it on your front step. And like this whole thing, we're like, we're going to give 5,000 bags of food. And we're sitting here like waiting for people to come fill up the bags after we make the big announcement. And like 20 families came. And I was like, they don't get it. Like they still... like there's still things that we're like trying to like shift this culture from like the church isn't about meeting in a building. It's about like who you are every day in your life and rubbing shoulders with your neighbors and impacting your community. And then we like try and put something like tangible in their hands. And it's like they're still not getting it. And that feels frustrating. But then like that happens and we're sitting here, we have like 3,000 extra bags. And we're like, like, what are we supposed to do with this pile of paper bags? And then like, we get a message from one of the local breweries in town. And he's like, hey, I just saw online what you're doing. Bring me a whole bunch of bags. We're going to give them out with every order. And everyone who brings back a full bag, we're going to give them a free beer. I'm like, what a great partnership with the Pentecostal church. This is amazing.
Yeah, I love that.
And then another local business, one of the like the best coffee shops in our city that like everyone knows is the like pinnacle of coffee here. They said the same thing. They're like, hey, can we give out bags? And then another restaurant asked. And so we're like, we're seeing it happen, but it's like the culture of our church and getting the hearts of our people to change has been like such a long, honestly exhausting process to like think that like, okay, I think they got it now. And then put something in front of them and it's like, but then to see that our church's presence in the community is still changing and that we can still have an impact even if there's certain people who never like grasp it. So
Hey, we'll jump back into our conversation with Kim in just a second. But before we do, I want to tell you about something really exciting, a new podcast coming out from the team at CCLN, and it's the Daryl Johnson Sermon Podcast. Daryl Johnson is my favorite preacher in the whole entire world. He is humble and smart. He always preaches in the expository form. He has a love for Jesus and the Word of God that is contagious. And he's been doing ministry for over 50 years. And just recently, we got access to his whole archive of sermons going all the way back to the 90s when he was at Glendale Presbyterian in California, to his time in the 2000s at First Baptist here in Vancouver, British Columbia. And so we're pulling the best of that sermon archive and making it available for you. So go ahead on whatever platform you're at and look up the Daryl Johnson Podcast and find his sermons posted weekly there. Okay, let's jump back in with our conversation with Kim. One of the things I wanted to chat with you, and hopefully we'll have some time later in this conversation or the next time you're on, is really talk about the relationship you guys have with the city and business in the city. Mm-hmm. I know even during COVID, you guys have been doing some online content where you're profiling mm-hmm. local businesses, which is so cool. But let's park that, and I want to stay in this culture conversation for a little bit. This maybe is an unfair question, but can you name the seven like values that you guys have? I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think it's helpful if people get a window into the culture you're trying to create at APA.
Yep. I should know them. So it's just a matter of whether my brain is working today or not. But the first one is diversity over division. And so we say, like, we want to be a church of diverse people. We might not always agree on everything. We might have different preferences and styles and come from different backgrounds, but we're never going to let ourselves be divided. So diversity over division, great over good. We never want to just be okay with the status quo. And we always say that God gave us his best and he deserves our best. And that's not a statement of perfection. It's really about, like, we don't want to be the people who are just like, where's the line of like how we can get into heaven? And let's just make sure that we're like crossing that line. It's like, no, we want to like give God our very best and be like all in and everything we do. And so obviously that trickles down into the way that we do everything as a church, but I think like mostly for our personal walk with God. Very, very good. Servants over stars is the third one. And so we say, like, you might be the most talented person in the world, but if you're not in it to bring glory to God and you're trying to bring glory to yourself, then we're just like not really interested in what you have to offer. And so we always tell people, like, you are not the person with the spotlight on you. You are working the spotlight to try and shine light on Jesus. And so if you're willing to be behind the scenes and shine light on him, that's how you'll get promoted here. So we say we promote servants over stars, cooperation over competition. And so as a staff and as a team, we work together with other churches in our city. We've always said that we'll work together with other small businesses. We work together with overseas partnerships. We work together. We don't ever want to feel like we're in competition because we have an enemy, and like, that's the devil. Like, we don't need to be our enemy is not other churches. Our enemy is not other people who are trying to advance the kingdom of God. So cooperation over competition, extraordinary over expected. And so we always say that we believe that God will do the extraordinary and not just the things that we expect him to do. But we always say we plan for extraordinary over expected. So if we're going to pray, like, God, grow our church, then we need to actually put things in place and believe that that's going to happen. And so that comes back to, for Clark and I, when we were youth pastoring, we were like, God, grow our youth group. God, grow our youth group. And then a drug dealer got saved, is like this crazy story, invited a whole bunch of his friends, and our youth group exploded like by 150 people in like a couple weeks, and we didn't have any leaders. And we just couldn't maintain the growth. And we're like, man, I never want that to happen again, where I'm asking God to do something and then he does it and I'm not prepared for it. So extraordinary over expected. I'm cheating. Restoration over rejection. So we say we promise restoration over rejection. And so our like personal value as a church is that we're not going to ever, like, everyone will always have a place and opportunity to find restoration here, regardless of their background, of their criminal history, of whatever it is that's gone on. Like, we are not the church that is not going to accept someone based on their lifestyle or their history or whatever. So we promise restoration over rejection, because we really like want people to experience that restoration in church. And the last one is, I'm going to cheat again. victors over victims. And so we say to people, like, we realize that hard things happen and difficulty, we go through difficult seasons in our lives, but we are on the winning team. Like in the end, even though things may be hard here in this life, we realize that God gets the final say over good and evil. And so we, it's victors over victims. And that comes through, I think, a lot in our worship, but also the like posture and the mindset that we bring hope and we bring life and we bring joy and we bring peace to things. We're not going to let our circumstances define us. And so a lot of these are like very, come from like personal experiences for us, but also history of what our church has been through.
I love that as a framework for trying to figure out the values of a church, is that sort of intersection between like taking the time to understand the story of the church and what's in its like DNA, even historical DNA, and maybe there's a spiritual dynamic there, but then also who you are as leaders, and there has to be that intersection.
It has to
and
be, yeah.
When I hear the values that you guys outline, it does, it makes sense of those two converging pieces so well. Yeah. One of the ways that I know you guys established culture, and there's tons of ways, but one that I think has been helpful for me as I think about leading my church, is you guys do these team rallies every week. And like before the service, you get people together. I know this is like a key moment of like doubling down on vision and culture. Can you just describe that moment weekly for you guys? I know it probably looks different right now during COVID. Maybe describe how you've been doing it during this time. But give us a window into that.
Half an hour before like our main gathering begins, like the start time for a main gathering, we meet together as anyone who is a part of like serving or volunteering or like a part of things. Like we all gather together, and it is really just a chance for us to cast vision, remind people of our values, remind people why we're here, keep the mission at the forefront of people's minds, and bring our team together. So we do shout outs like in those times of like, hey, you know, I just want to shout out this person. I've seen them serving faithfully. And it's often like we let our team do that and acknowledge just the way that other people have stepped up and are serving. And then we pray together. And so it is just like a chance for us to come together and remind ourselves, this is who we are. This is why we're doing what we're doing. This is why it's important that you're serving, that you're a part of this. Like we're not just here because we're supposed to be every week. Like there's a bigger purpose behind it. And then really just praying over people and releasing them. And so our kids team will then go down the hall, and our music team and our media team goes in, and then our greeters hit their doors, and like all those different areas, everybody just kind of goes out from there, realizing that all of their roles are equally important in accomplishing what we want to do. And so right now during COVID, we're doing the same thing. We just do it on a Zoom call 30 minutes before every one of our online. So we have like three online gatherings right now, and we just are like serving team meets half an hour before those calls, just to like pray together. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's what we want you to do. It's a smaller team right now, obviously, because we don't need as many people, but that's what we're doing.
I think what stands out to me about it as well is I've been involved with like worship team. Let's get together as a worship team beforehand or kids ministry. And for practical reasons, it's actually quite difficult to get everybody done what needs to be done before the service, so they can all be together for even a 15-minute meeting like that. But the value that you guys have put on saying, we've all got to be ready, and we're all going to come together on that equal footing. So like as lead pastors, you guys are there, as preachers, they're there, worship team, all the way down to the person who's, you know, greeting at the front door, and putting that all on the same footing is just really cool to watch.
And it was hard right away, because when we told people, like people are used to just coming to their door for like 20 minutes before the service starts. Oh, people don't come that early anyway. I don't need to be here. So they would sometimes come at like 9:45 if our service starts at 10. And we're saying to them like, hey, we actually need you to come at 9:15, because at 9:15 till 9:30, you're going to have your like, you know, all the greeters are just going to meet. These are specific things just for the greeters today. Here's specific things just for the production team today. Here's a specific meeting just for the kids. And people would just like, we told them come 9:15 and they just wouldn't show up. And then at 9:30, we're all meeting together. And it took like, it's taken probably a year and a half to get most of our teams actually showing up on time, because they were like, why do I need to be there? It's Sunday morning. I want to sleep in. But we just kept doing it, even if there wasn't a big group of people. And our goal is always to make people feel like they're missing out on something if they're not at something that we're doing. Make it like fun. So.
Oh, it's so good. Hey, I'm wondering if you'd be up for talking a little bit about your health journey. I mean, one of the things that's remarkable, you would keep saying over the last 4 years, there's been massive other subplots to you and Clark's personal lives over these 4 years. And one of that is your health journey. And just, if you could just take us a little bit into what you've experienced with MS and how that's impacted your leadership.
Yeah. I lose track of timelines a little bit, but I think like about 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with MS. And so for me, that was one of those like life-changing moments for me that caused me to like really reevaluate everything. And my tendency has always been to be like a little bit of a workaholic, like someone who I just like work really hard all day long and they'll take my computer home at the end of the day and just like keep going. And I'm diagnosed with this like incurable neurological disease that really has me questioning like, am I going to be able to do the things that I love? Mm-hmm. What does my future look like? Am I going to be able to preach? Because sometimes people think about MS and they see the physical, like the physical impact that that has on people's bodies with, you know, maybe they end up in a wheelchair, you need to use a cane or whatever that looks like. But I would say that some of the like cognitive challenges that can come with MS are even greater than the physical things. And it's just because the nature of the disease is that like wherever you have damage on your brain, that can affect whatever that function is. And so much of our brains obviously are responsible for cognitive things. So I was finding like even I'd be preaching and I wouldn't be able to like remember where I was going next. Mm. And I would feel like I would just always like lose my train of thought, or in my head as I was preparing, I was like, okay, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And it's like a good moment. And then I wouldn't get a good night's sleep the night before. And my brain just felt like it was slowing down. And all of a sudden the things that I felt so confident in, I felt like I couldn't communicate, or I'd be trying to find a word. And I would just be like, that's why it's so mean that you just made me do my seven values.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine. Expose all my weaknesses. I'm just kidding.
So sorry.
But I would like be trying to remember, and I would just be trying to find like a word, and could be like a simple word like calendar. And I was like, oh, what's that called? Like, what's that cheat? And I'd like find, and it felt, I think I had these moments where I was like, okay, God, I really believe that like I've given my life to like serve you and to help other people discover that. And I feel like you've given me gifts to be able to like lead in the church. And now I find myself with this disease, and like, what is that? Is this going to take all that away from me? Like, how am I still supposed to lead and serve you? Because I'm like, it's embarrassing. Like when you can't find the words to say things, or you think even, you know, someone comes and asks you to do like a speaking engagement and you just like know that your brain isn't firing properly and like functioning properly, and you feel like you totally bomb. And I'm like, I can't say yes to speaking engagements anymore. Nobody should give me a microphone. Like how am I supposed to do that? And even like there's some days you feel tired and you're like, oh, does the team think I'm lazy? Because I've like had to just call it in a little bit earlier, especially when you've like really valued work ethic yourself in your whole life. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, mm-hmm. I started to wrestle with all those things and just like really work through that, figuring out who I wanted to be and what life looked like. And then, yeah, like probably 2 years after that, we end up at the church, and I hadn't been shy about my diagnosis. And so the church kind of heard and knew when we were getting voted in that I had MS. And I think that for me, I felt, whether this is like perceived or reality, I felt like they were like, oh, like, well, she can't, she's not really going to be the leader. Like, she's not really going to be able to do much because she's sick. And I'm like, like, I just hate when other people put that on me. Like, there's some moments where I'm like, sorry guys, I'm not feeling well. But when other people are like, oh, you can't do that, you're sick, I'm like, Mike, like, you know, I don't know if you've watched the Michael Jordan documentary, but he's like, yeah, egg me on, tell me I can't do something. I'm like, that's like my personality. And so then I think that causes me to want to like rise up even more and be like, no, like I can do this. Anyway, that's a sidetrack. But we like started off, and I felt that like real, like it felt like a bit of a challenge to me. Like, how am I going to continue to lead in this? Because I do, like, I still feel very insecure about this like MS diagnosis, because I don't know what every day is going to look like. Mm. I don't know what I'm capable of. Some days I feel like I can knock things out of the park, and other days it's like things just like are not firing properly and not connecting. And yeah, it's hard, but I just like keep saying to myself, at the end of my life, I want to be able to look back on my life and know that I did absolutely everything that I could to advance the gospel and to help God in the reconciliation of everything here on this earth. Like, I want to be able to say that I did my best. And so sometimes that means that I'm leading and living out of a weak place, but I'm still trying to like do the best that I can in my weakness. And that sometimes looks a little bit less than what I would like it to look like, but it is what it is.
How is that health journey impacted some of your personal rhythms? I'm thinking about diet, rest, exercise, even prayer, meditation. you take us into a bit about how you've sort of, because I know one of your values that you guys described was victor over victims.
Yeah.
I think part of that is really modeled well in the life, in your life, of how you said, okay, I'm going to do everything I can to bring the healthiest version of myself to the table, even if that's not as healthy as I'd like it to be. Can you just take us into some of how you've reordered your life to be able to maintain the leadership that you have still?
Yeah. I, like very early on, I was like, okay, if this is going to be my life, if I have this disease, how can I still live my best life? If I have 5 good years, how do I live those 5 years? Like the best that I can live them. And so I went and I had, kind of like your conventional medical treatments. And I did like some pretty intense, like medical treatment stuff with my doctor's neurological team. But then I started to do some research and I realized that like my diet and my lifestyle could also really impact my health. Mm. And so I did, I like drastically changed my diet, like cut out basically everything you can think of that tastes good. I decided to like cut out because of the inflammation that it was causing in my body, and just started to eat in a very like whole foods way, and started to really be mindful of just making sure that my body was active and I was treating it well. I even like cut out things like coffee, just to give me time to just like slow down and calm down my nervous system and things. And it was just like, I honestly went from having like a very workaholic, like drink coffee, eat quickly on the go, like work all the time in front of my screen, to seeing like, okay, how do I manage my stress? Feed my body well, slow down, take time for the things that are important. And it was like a drastic shift for me. And even people started to question me right from the beginning. They're like, what are you doing? Like, if you already are going to live with this disease, why do you want to make your life harder by cutting out things that taste good? Or, you know, but you love coffee. Like, why would you give up coffee? Like, isn't that, if your life is already going to be hard, then shouldn't you have things? And I just, this is what I continue to say to people to this day, is like, I love my life. Like I love the life that I have. I love the people in my life. I love what I do. I want to be as effective as I can in the things that I put my hands to. So to me, I'm like, why wouldn't I like give up some things that could prevent that from being everything that I want it to be? Like if me eating more vegetables and less pastries is going to make me more capable to be able to like communicate clearer and to think clearer, then why wouldn't I give that up for the sake of being able to use my life for what really matters? And so it has been like a major, it's night and day. My life, when I think about what my life looked like 6 years ago, I feel like it's just like night and day to where it was. Like I was working full time and running a nonprofit organization on the side and doing my master's full time at the same time. Like that's like the kind of life that I had. And now I'm just like trying to figure out how to have like space to just like do the things that I love, be with the people I love, take care of myself, my mind, my body, my spirituality. And that has been like, it is literally, I feel like I'm a different person than I was six years ago. Hopefully in a good way. I'm just sure there's things too that I need to work through, but I feel like I'm like a completely different person because of that shift that happened in my life. It just like really made me reevaluate everything.
Wow. Before we jumped on the call together, or started recording rather, we chatted a little about this idea of like a life with congruency or life that's integrated. And just for you as a pastor and leader, just the importance of it coming from like a deep well of relationship with God. I would just love to hear you just unpack that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And what you really mean by that idea of like a life that's integrated and congruent.
Yeah. Well, you asked me like if there was one thing that you could say to leaders, and I was like, man, what would that be? Like if there's so many things that I would love to talk about, but if there's like one thing that's made the biggest difference for me in my life, in my leadership, I think it has been realizing that like I can read all the books to become a better leader, listen to all the good podcasts. I can, you know, have good conversations with people. You know, I can try and eat healthy. I can try and read my Bible and finish my Bible reading in a year plan all the way through. Like I can do all those things, but at like the core of it is like, if I am not a like healthy person, who really understands the love and the grace and the magnitude of who God is and what he's done for me, then I end up just striving to accomplish all these different things. And it's exhausting. Like I feel like any time that all of that just like, where I'm just like trying to like do things, I feel like it's exhausting. But when I realize that like, man, there's a God that loves me so much, who has invited me in to be a part of the restoration of the world that's been like destroyed by so much stuff that messes up our lives. And he loves me so much that he like gave everything up for me and now has invited me into that. Like when that bleeds into every area of my life, I'm like, man, I need to take care of my body and eat healthy and be active because like I need to be the best that I can to help God in the restoration of all things. Like I'm his partner in that. Like I need to do that well. Or like even at leadership, I'm like, man, God's giving me the responsibility to lead. Like we have a team of like 9 or 10 young leaders, all under 30 on our staff team. Like Clark and I are like the oldest ones in our mid 30s. And I'm like, my responsibility to like lead them, I'm like, that has to come out of this like understanding of who God is to me. Because if I understand that and I'm like, man, God loves them the exact same way that he loves me and he wants to partner with them too to do their part. Well, I need to like make sure that I'm giving them the best tools that I can and I want to hear what they have to say. And so that's affected that leadership and my relationship at home with my husband and my child. Like that's impacted when I understand that. And so when people preach and they teach about like, you just really need to understand the love of God, it like becomes this cliche thing that we just like say. And it's like, yeah, you just need to understand and have a deep relationship with God. It's like, no, that's it for me. Like the reason why all my interactions with local businesses, all my interactions with my family, all my interactions with my staff, all my interactions with myself are coming from that understanding that like, man, God has been so good to me and so generous and so gracious to me. How could I not take care of every area of my life? And it's just not exhausting when it ends up just flowing. I feel like it ends up just like flowing out of me. Like it feels easy for me, because even like sometimes people are like, how do you do this? How do you do that? What's the answer? I'm like, Jesus. Like I don't even know what to say because I feel like it just ends up flowing out of you and it just feels like it takes so much less work. I feel like there's no striving. And it's not that there aren't moments where you like get caught up in that and you're like, dude, what's wrong with me? Like I'm just, but it's true. It's like, I don't feel like it's just trying to like keep a balance. And we like talked about this a little bit beforehand. I don't think it's just about trying to keep a balance of everything in my life. And like, I don't want to spend too much time on work and too much time on my family. It's like, no, I love what I get to do at work, but I also like love my family so much that I'm just going to like give whatever I have within me. I'm just going to keep like giving to whoever's in front of me in that moment and being present and being real and being in the moment. That's like what I try to do. I'm not perfect at it, but I feel like that's been the game changer for me, where before I was just trying to like be the best. Like, how do I be the best leader? Like, how do I get this project finished and be the best at it? How do I, you know, whatever that looks like.
I appreciate
Sorry, did I just preach
that.
At you a little bit? That's sorry.
Yeah, well, you did, but so it was sorry. Really well received. I was, I would have been saying amen, et cetera, knowing you're pastor of Pentecostal church, but I just felt like it didn't fit the genre of the podcast.
Thank you.
No, I love it. And love you sharing that. Made me think about this question. What are some of the indicators in your life when you feel like you might be not leading and living from that place? Like, what are some of those sort of like gauges that you would have like, oh, that draw you back into that place?
Like where I recognize that like I've gotten off track a little bit, I think about myself. Whenever I start thinking about myself and like, well, that's not fair for me. That's not good for me. Why would they treat me like that? Why would someone do that for me? Like anytime I start getting selfish, I'm like, oh, I've lost track. Like I've completely lost track of who I'm supposed to be. Wow. And so that it's always it, like anytime. And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be moments of like self-reflection, because I have a lot of moments of self-reflection, but when it gets focused on like, I deserve, this is what I want, this is how I think things should go. Like that's a big indicator to me that, I've like lost a little bit track of my purpose, because my purpose is not to serve me. And I don't know. I maybe need to think about that a little bit more, but I would say that's the biggest thing.
Wow. Kim, if you would come on the podcast again, I want to talk to you about the adoption of AO and that journey. I'd love to chat with you about leading a young staff. I think that we have lots to learn from you about leading a young staff. I'd love to chat more about the culture making. I want to chat about co-leading with Clark and the best and learnings from that. But just as we wrap up today, I just love to hear a little bit like what's kind of on your heart for Abbotsford, for APA, and for the church in Canada. I know that you've got your friends with a number of pastors across the country before COVID, often traveling and speaking and serving other ministries and churches. I'd just love to know maybe, yeah, what do you see on the horizon? What's filling your imagination, heart? And yeah, what are the dreams?
I think like my biggest vision right now for our church, and I see, like, even when I say like our church, I just like, it just feels so big to me. Like right now, it, like when I talk about it, I like see this little thing, but then I like look down the road and it feels so much bigger than that. But my vision for our church, is that we would be able to shift from being like really program driven within the walls of the church to finding ways to like release our people out to actually, because we say that all the time. Like we say, like, we don't want to be program driven. It's not about just bringing people in. It's about sending people out. And I think I just, like, I think I'm just kind of sick of that conversation of like, yeah, like it is, it's about sending people out, not bringing people in. And then we're running like 500 programs and services and different things in the church where it's like, bring your friends, bring your people, bring your neighbors, invite them out. And I'm like, man, if what we're saying is true, if we really believe that it's not about just bringing people in, that it's about like going out and meeting people where they're at, then we have to change the way that we structure things. And in a 101-year-old church, like they've been running like, they have like a Sunday school programs and kids programs and crusaders and Christ ambassadors and WM and men's fellowship. Like all these things have like existed for like decades and decades and decades. But we actually have just made the decision. It's been a 4-year long decision that we've completely eliminated any like inside programming or services outside of our like Sunday gathering where the whole church is together in celebration in one place. We've completely cut everything for anyone 18 and older. And we've moved to complete we're calling them socials, where it's like you're meeting in your community and it's not just around like a Bible study or a service. So it's like, you like to work out at the gym, or right now at the park or whatever, like get a group of your friends together. And that's your time to like social. And there's like a few criteria and stuff that we're like, you know, that they have to like meet and to do that to make sure that we're like all coming together around the same thing. Or it's like, you know, you want to have a running group, like go to this park, have a running group. You want to have a knitters group, get together. Because for me, I'm like, I'm most of the time in the conversations that I have, and we're like, just try and be just like very present just because we're normal people and we like going out. Like we visit the same coffee shops and bakeries and restaurants and things. And most of the time when I meet people, I'm not saying like, hey, come to my church so you can hear me preach and sing a bunch of karaoke songs that you've never heard before that mean nothing to you on Sunday. Like that's not the invitation that I'm giving people. And I think for a long time I felt like a bad Christian because I was like, I don't really want to invite people to church. I don't feel like this would make sense to them right now. But if I meet somebody, like if somebody at a coffee shop, I like have a great conversation with them and I find out that they're a runner, I'm like, oh, you did the Whistler Half Marathon too? Join my running group. Like, hey, we meet at Mill Lake. Come, like my friends and I run together. That's like a really great way for me to just like get to know them a little bit, for them to meet some other people in our community. And then the goal is that they would come and be a part of our running group and be like, what, you guys all go to the same church, but you're normal. Be like, I know we are. We're like very normal people. We just have this like hope and this like peace and this joy that doesn't make sense, but we're really normal. Like if you ever wanted to like come and learn more about what we're doing, there's ways to do that. Anyway, so that I feel like that's like my biggest heart and my hope right now is that we would stop talking about how we think that church needs to move. And it requires making tough decisions and making people mad enough that they leave your church because you cut the program that's so dear to their heart. And like, it has not been an easy process, but I just felt like the conviction of my heart of like, this is who God wants us to be. It requires us sometimes to shift the way that we're doing things. And that requires taking a bit of a risk sometimes and doing things a little bit outside the box, at least for a traditional church. That's why I'm sometimes jealous of church planters. I'm like, oh, you get to create all this right from the beginning. I know there's like different challenges that come with church planting, but the idea of not having to like axe all the programs that people love is very appealing. But I feel like, yeah, that's my vision, is that we would just move from just being inside. I honestly feel like our building sometimes is our biggest hindrance because people think that we need to use it to the best of its ability and we need to have all these things happening every night of the week. And I'm like, man, I'm like literally pulling teeth trying to tell people, get into your community, meet your neighbors, go have coffee at someone's house, invite people in. And they're like, oh, but what are we having at the church that I can invite people to? So sometimes I wish we could do like pop-up church and rent a gym or something, because what we're trying to help people understand is like, it is not about what you're doing inside these walls. It's great that we can come and celebrate and enjoy each other and learn together and worship together. But like, this is, your faith is not meant to be lived out within these walls. So I think that's my biggest vision for the church.
I appreciate you sharing that. And this season has been like obviously so painful and disruptive. And I know we're all praying for it to end, but there just seems to be these like gifts wrapped up in the chaos of it all.
Yeah.
Gifts of like drawing near to God in our own life. But even just what you described about this idea of like, what's left if we don't have our services? And like, it's interesting hearing you, Kim, to say this stuff, because you and Clark run really good services, like for whatever it's worth. They're like,
thanks.
They're great preaching, great worship, smooth transitions, but not too smooth. That's not trustworthy. Like you guys just, it's like, it's awesome. And the environment's great. And it's like, that's as, to me, that's as good as like a Sunday experience can get. And then to hear you say, it's like, it's just not enough. It's like, we could do those all week long and it's not moving the dial. It's just really causing me to reflect and to pause.
Yeah. And I think it's an important part of what we do. Like, that's why we try and do them with excellence. Like, I love getting everyone that I haven't seen all week together, believing that we all together have been going out into our cities and our neighborhoods and bringing hope to every home, like in our cities. Like, I'm believing that's happened. And then to get everyone in the same room and like, now let's worship God together and celebrate everything he's doing. And like, let's all like learn something together that can propel us into the next season. I think there's so much value in that and I want to do it well, but that isn't it. It can't be it. I feel like it's like such a small part and so much of the church has been built on that. And then I mean, million other thing. Like there was seasons where literally every single night of the week, families were in the church doing things. And I'm like, at what point are you like rubbing shoulders with your neighbors? Like all your friends, all your people, all your everything is just this like community. And I'm like, I just don't see that that's the way that Jesus lived or that he told us to do. Or even beyond that, how on earth are we supposed to accomplish our mission of bringing hope to every home if we're just inside doing our own services in a way that doesn't always even make sense to the people that we're trying to reach? Anyway.
Well, I'm so grateful for your time, for your story. I want everyone to follow along with interest, because I think even what you're describing, launching these socials, I think there's lots to learn from churches like APA who are honoring a history, shifting culture, working intergenerationally. You guys have so many young people, but I've visited before, and to see all the generations there, it's really special to watch. And so thanks so much for you and Clark's leadership, for making time to hang out with us today. And just watching with deep interest in the things you guys learn and do over the next number of years.
Thanks. Stay tuned. There's lots coming.
I'm so thankful that Kim took time to be with us today in this conversation. We've got highlights from this interview available on our blog at ccln.ca and our Instagram and on our YouTube channel as well. And today's episode is possible because of our friends at Compassion Canada. Compassion's mission is to release children from poverty in Jesus' name. And recently I was on a call with the Compassion team and I got a glimpse of just how much COVID-19 has impacted development work around the world. You know, we've all been affected by COVID-19. That's the reality. It's affected our daily lives and the life of the church here in Canada and around the world. But for communities where Compassion Canada serves, everything about COVID-19 is magnified. Here's some examples. Pastors of Compassion's local church partners are sharing that their congregation's unemployment rate has skyrocketed. So families are struggling to stay fed and housed. Recently, the World Food Program has estimated that the global hunger rates will double by the end of this year. And so COVID-19 isn't just a health crisis, it's now also a food crisis. In the face of this overwhelming need, the work of Compassion's local church partners is more critical than it's ever been, and they need our support. They're providing desperately needed food, hygiene, and rent support to the most critically affected children and families around the world. And Compassion is inviting the global church, you and I, to rise as one to meet these needs. Everything you need to know to get involved can be found at compassion.ca.